Our second scripture reading this morning comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 12 and 13. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, but then I will know fully, as even I have been fully known. There's an old question that crops up in our house periodically that Nancy and I argue about. I guess I should say we discuss. The question is, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? Now, you would think Nancy was born in the Show Me State of Missouri. So you would think she would be the one that would say, well, if you can't have positive proof that it made a sound and when nobody was there, then you can't say that as a fact. But I usually end up taking that side of the argument. I say, well, maybe trees fall and they create some vibration, and it's only our ears and our brain that translate those vibrations into sound. So if there are no ears, there's no sound. So maybe if a tree falls and there's no ears there to hear it, it doesn't actually make any sound. It does make me wonder, does everything have to be experienced before we know that it's real? I don't know. It's one of those questions that may never have a final answer. It may seem like a silly thing and kind of a silly thing to discuss. But it points out something important in life. In this life, not everything is clear-cut. A scientist with all kinds of degrees and credentials might one day announce, after much study and analysis, there is simply no practical way to make an efficient electric car. The law of physics and energy just won't allow it. And then along comes Elon Musk. He scratches his head and says, well, I don't know about that. The other day, Nancy and I were driving across the passes over there, and I'm pretty sure about every third car that we went past was a Tesla going along. Made me think, my, how the things that we know can change. It makes me wonder, where does what we think we know come from? How much of what we believe is based only on what we have personally seen or heard or experienced? The Bible tells us that faith is the evidence of things not seen. That does not mean that faith is believing in something without reason. It means that accepting that reality may be larger than what our own eyes can see, what our ears can hear, or what our minds can fully understand. When I hear those words, the evidence of things not seen, it makes me think about Helen Keller. I have a hard time wrapping my mind around the idea that someone can be both deaf and blind and make sense of the world. Think about that for just a minute. No light, total blackness, no sound, utter silence. How many of you have been down to the Cave of the Winds or Carlsbad Cavern? If you've been down in one of those caves, and they normally will take you down there and then shut off the lights for just a second, suddenly, now you know what blackness is all about. You can hold your hand in front of your face and wave it back and forth and you'd never know it was there. You can imagine that darkness and then add to that darkness, that black, utter and complete silence, no sound. No familiar voice calling your name, no footsteps approaching. No way to know whether someone is standing beside you or whether you are completely alone. Nothing to tell you where you are, what is happening around you, or what the next moment might bring. Just darkness, silence, and uncertainty. Can you imagine anything more frightening than that? Most of us understand the world through words and pictures. You see me standing up here waving at this fly. You hear my voice as I speak, and the words form thoughts and images in your mind as I speak. But Helen had no shared language. She could feel the world around her. She could touch things. She could smell them. She could sense the presence of other people. But she had no way of knowing that everything even had a name. She had thoughts and she had feelings, but no words to express them. She had needs, but no way to explain them. She could reach out and touch another human being, but she couldn't understand what that other person was trying to tell her. She was surrounded by a world that she had no way to understand. And I'm always amazed when I read about her life. You know, God has blessed us with our basic five senses, and through them we know a world bursting with sound and color. If I say the word waterfall to you, you can see a waterfall in your mind. You can hear the water crashing down onto the rocks, and if you concentrate hard enough, you can even feel the mist from the waterfall or smell the wet earth. You can experience a waterfall in your mind even though you're not there. But what if you had never seen a waterfall? What if you'd never even seen a picture of a waterfall? What if someone told you the grass is green and the sky is blue, but the words green and blue meant absolutely nothing to you? What if all you knew was black? Suppose a person right now, today, was sitting beside you, been blind from birth, and they turned to you and they said, What does the color blue look like? What would you say? Think about that. You might say that blue is the color of the sky or the ocean, but that would mean nothing to someone that had never seen the sky or the ocean. If color had never been a part of that person's world, then red and yellow and green and blue would be just words, names for something beyond their ability to even imagine. Talking about this makes me think of Paul's words in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that we just read. For now, we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know as also I am known. The glass that Paul spoke of was not a clear glass window like we have around us today. It was more like a dim and imperfect mirror. Paul seems to be saying that we see only a faint reflection. We understand little bits and pieces. We know that something's there, but we cannot see it yet clearly. Not clearly enough to see the whole picture. We can see the outline, but we can't see the color. But there will come a time when we no longer need anyone to explain the color blue or describe the beauty of a waterfall, because we will see it for ourselves. What we now accept by faith, we will one day know face to face. So there was Helen, living in a world without sight, without sound. She had no language, no way to tell anybody what she was thinking or feeling. Her family loved her, and they cared for her, but they had little reason to believe that she would ever be able to communicate clearly or live anything close to an independent life. And then Ann Sullivan entered her life. Anne became Helen's teacher and companion. What happened next has often been called the miracle. And I think there was a movie even named that about her life. One day, Anne took Helen to the water pump, and as the water was flowing over one of Helen's hands, Anne formed the letters spelling water into the palm of her other hand. She did it again and again. Water flowing over one hand. W-A-T-E-R. And then suddenly, a flash of understanding. Helen got it. We might call that an aha moment, but it must have been so much more than that. It's hard to imagine what that moment must have been like for her in that dark, dark world. For the first time, Helen realized that the signs Anne was tracing into her hand had meaning. The cool liquid flowing over her fingers had a name, water. Something in the dark silence suddenly clicked into place. And once she understood just that one word, a whole new world began to open. The water had been there all along. The meaning had been there all along. Helen simply had not found the doorway into it. For one brief moment, Helen's sense of touch crossed her boundaries of sight and sound, and everything changed. Wow, what that must have been like. In an instant in time, it suddenly became for Helen a purpose for living, a spark that had changed her entire life. That little girl who seemed to have no future became a woman who graduated from college, wrote books, and spoke to people all around the world. I sometimes enjoy reading the words of people who have lived remarkable lives like Helen, because sometimes a few simple words can hold the wisdom of an entire lifetime. Helen Keller once said, "The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart." Coming from a woman who accomplished so much after beginning with so little, those words carry a special meaning. And I think they might be especially meaningful to those of us who have grown old in our faith. We may not see Jesus with our eyes, and we may not hear his voice as clearly as we would like. We may still have questions and doubts about things that we don't understand. But that doesn't mean that he's not there. Some of the deepest truths of faith are not seen or touched. They are felt and known within the heart. There are so many things in the Bible that cannot be understood with only the mind. They must be felt in the heart. Love one another. Trust God. Forgive. Have faith. Believe that death is not the end. These can become words that we read from a page. We can nod our heads and say that we believe them, but there comes a time when we'll have to decide whether they are just comforting words or whether they point to a reality greater than anything that we can presently understand. As I was writing all of this, I stopped right there and I said, "Okay, Rick, where are you going with this? What's the message?" And I think the message is this, a little, is that there's so much more in life and to God than we are presently able to understand. Helen Keller lived for years without knowing that the movements that Anne Sullivan traced into her hand had some meaning. Language was real. Words were real. Ideas were real. Communication was possible. All of that was there before Helen understood any of it. And then came that moment at the water pump, and a world she could never have imagined began to open before her. I wonder whether that is something like what Paul meant when he said, "Now we see through a glass darkly, but one day we'll see face to face." Right now we know something about God. We catch glimpses of love, God and love and beauty and kindness, forgiveness and grace. We have our God-sighting moments. And those are moments when we can feel that God is near. But the truth is, we really don't understand very much. Maybe we're a little like Helen standing at the water pump just before the word made sense. We feel something deep down inside. We sense that there is more. We believe that there's more, but we don't fully understand it. And perhaps death, for a person who trusts in Christ, that is the moment when that meaning finally becomes clear. Not the closing of a door, the opening of a door. Not the end of a book, but the turning of a page. It may be the moment when we no longer need someone to explain the color blue because we can see it for ourselves. We no longer need someone to describe the waterfall because we are standing in its midst. We no longer have to wonder what it means to be completely known and completely loved because we are standing face to face with God. Now, I don't pretend to know exactly what heaven will be like. None of us does. The Bible gives us glimpses, but it does not answer every question we might have. And I think maybe there's a reason for that. How could God ever possibly explain heaven when all we have for comparison is this? How could you explain music to someone who's never heard a sound? How could you explain sunlight to someone who has never seen light? How could you describe the color blue to someone who has lived in darkness? Maybe heaven is not difficult to describe because it's vague or unreal. Maybe it's difficult to describe because it is so much more real than anything we have ever known. Paul wrote, "Eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him." Think about what that means. The best thing you have ever seen is not enough to describe it. The most beautiful music you've ever heard is not enough to express it. The happiest moment you have ever experienced is not enough to imagine it. God has prepared something beyond the limits of our sight, our hearing, and even our imagination. And that gives us something to look forward to. Now, I realize that it's one thing to talk about death when it seems far away, but it's a whole other thing when you're getting older and beginning to recognize that it may not be quite so far away as it once seemed. There may be things about the process of dying that scares us just a little. We may worry about pain. We may worry about losing our independence. We may wonder about what those final moments might be like. And I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting that. Faith does not require us to pretend that we never feel afraid. That night in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus knew the anguish he faced as he faced what lay ahead. But then he said, "Not my will, but thy will." Jesus understood. There's a difference between being afraid of the process of dying and being afraid of what awaits us on the other side. The process may seem uncertain, but Christ is not. Jesus told his disciples, "I go to prepare a place for you." He didn't say, "I'm going to send you out into the unknown and hope everything works out okay." He said he was preparing a place. And he said, "I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, ye may be also." That is a promise. Not simply that life continues somehow. Not merely that our spirit drifts off into some endless fog. The promise is that we will be with Christ. Perhaps we've spent too much time thinking of death as losing everything familiar, and not enough time as thinking of it as discovering everything you've ever been promised. We will discover what it means to see clearly. We will discover what it means to be free of weakness and limitations of these bodies. We'll discover what it means to know God, not only through sermons and Bible verses and prayers and brief moments of awareness, but face to face. We will discover that faith was not wishful thinking. Hope was not pretending. The promises were not simply words printed on a page. They were true. For most of our lives, we have thought of death as leaving. Leaving home, leaving our family, leaving the world we know. But from heaven's point of view, death is not about leaving. It's about arriving. It's coming home. It's an opening of our eyes to a world that was there all along, but that we did not have the ability to see. God is spelling out the word H-E-A-V-E-N as he closes our eyes on this temporary world. And maybe that's why death does not have to be the dark and frightening thing that we sometimes imagine. We are not stepping into nothingness. We're stepping into more. More life, more understanding, more love, more of God than our minds and senses can presently hold. At our age, we spend a lot of time looking backward. We remember the people that we've loved and the places that we've lived and the work that we did and all the experiences that shaped us and made us who we are. And there's nothing wrong with looking back. We have been blessed with memories that are worth holding on to. But being a Christian means that no matter how old we get, our greatest experience still lies ahead. Think about that. The most astonishing moment of your existence may not be something that happened 50 years ago. It may still be waiting for you. The greatest beauty you will ever see lies ahead. The deepest love you will ever know lies ahead. The clearest understanding you will ever have may still lie ahead. Meeting Jesus face to face is still ahead. So maybe we should not think of ourselves merely as people approaching the end of life. We are people approaching the moment when life becomes so much more than we've ever known it to be. Helen Keller's world did not begin at the water pump. The world had always been there, but it was at the water pump that the doorway opened. The sign had meaning. The water had a name, and suddenly everything began to make sense. Perhaps one day each of us will experience something like that. The page will turn, the doorway will open, and what we see only dimly will become clear. What we know only in part, we will finally understand. And I sometimes wonder that when we get there, if our first thought is not going to be something like, "So, God, this is what you were talking about." This is what Jesus was trying to tell us. This was here all along. And on that day, we may realize that death was never something to fear. It's simply the water pump. It is the moment when everything finally begins to make sense. Amen.